From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
California and the San Joaquin Valley have a higher share of undocumented farm workers than anywhere in the nation. Estimates are that 60 to 70% of California farm workers are undocumented. In an unusual show of general consensus, advocates for both farmers and farm workers generally agree that the current immigration system simply does not work. As a result, both growers and farm worker advocates sat down and negotiated the agricultural provisions that are now part of the current immigration bill being discussed in Washington. And farm worker and immigration advocates, as well as growers, are now pushing for its passage. What's wrong with the current system, and how will the agricultural provisions in the Senate's comprehensive immigration bill address those problems? We'll ask Professor Philip Martin, chair of the UC Comparative Immigration and Integration Program, Jason Resnick, general counsel for the Western Growers Association, and Diana Tellison Torres, executive director of the United Farm Workers Foundation. We'll also hear from Ryan Jacobson, CEO of the Fresno Farm Bureau, Rob Roy, president of the Ventura County Agricultural Association, and Mark Silverman, director of immigrant policy at the Immigrant Legal Resources Center. California agriculture and immigration reform. Will it die on the vine?
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with executive director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. Perhaps no California industry is more dependent on immigrant labor than agriculture. As a result, the implications for immigration reform could be seismic for California agriculture. Fortunately, we have an expert on immigration and farm labor with us today. Professor Philip Martin is chair of the UC Comparative Immigration and Integration Program. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thank you.
Well, first, can you give us a brief overview of the current situation?
Well, the United States has roughly 40 million foreign-born people. And of those, a little over 25%, almost one in four, are unauthorized, undocumented, illegal. So that means there's roughly 11 million unauthorized foreigners in the United States, including about 2.5 million in California. So California has about 1/8 of the world's, of the United States population, and it has about 1/4 of the unauthorized foreigners in the U.S.
Well, what's wrong with the current immigration system as it relates to agriculture and farm labor?
Well, agriculture stands out as being the largest major industry in which over half of the workforce is unauthorized. So farmers are living with uncertainty because they don't know if immigration enforcement might take away their workers. It's hard to justify training in workers who are unauthorized so that they could earn more and that they would be more productive. And there's always uncertainty. The farm workers are young. They have U.S.-born children who are U.S. citizens, yet their parents could be removed at any time. So uncertainty for farmers, uncertainty for the unauthorized foreigners, and uncertainty for their children as well as communities is the big issue with the current situation.
A lot of uncertainty. So the question is, does the bill that was passed in the Senate address those uncertainties?
The bill that was passed in the Senate tries to address those uncertainties in three ways. First, it tries to stop more people coming to the U.S. illegally with lots of fences and agents at the border. And it requires all employers to check newly hired workers and make sure that they're legally authorized to work. Without that magnet or that entry into the labor market, people may not come. Secondly, it puts those 11 million people, most of them, on a path to legal status. Thirdly, it brings in new guest worker programs for the high tech, for agriculture, and for other low-skilled industries.
What does it do specifically for agriculture in terms of guest workers?
What it does for agriculture is it's got a special legalization program for people who were employed in agriculture, and it creates two new guest worker programs that, compared to the current H-2A program, make it easier for farmers to recruit and employ legal guest workers from abroad.
How do the numbers compare to what is currently happening with farm workers in the United States or in California versus what they're asking for in these W visa programs?
Well, numbers in agriculture are always a little tricky. The issue is that we have what the Bureau of Labor Statistics measures is the average number of people employed. So they measure full-time equivalent jobs. And there's about 1.2 million of those in agriculture across the U.S. and about 400,000 in California. But it takes more than one worker to fill one year-round job because some quit, because more are needed at the season. So we're talking about roughly 800,000 individuals in California, 2.5 million in the United States. What the bill would do is it would legalize currently unauthorized workers, and they would have to continue working in agriculture, and would have two new guest worker programs that those workers could stay up to 3 years. So unlike seasonal guest workers in the past with braceros or with current H-2A workers who normally don't stay more than 10 months, new guest workers could stay longer.
They say 3 years, and they can also re-up it for another 3 years, I believe.
And they could re-up it for another 3 years.
Let me ask about this. Agriculture has traditionally been the gateway to other parts of the economy. So what happens if we bring all these farm workers here? Aren't they just, if they have a quicker path to citizenship or to permanent residency, aren't they just going to leave the fields and go into other parts of the economy? And aren't we just going to have this problem all over again as a need for farm workers?
Well, a guest worker is a guest. A guest normally comes in and then departs at the end of the time when their work permit expires. There will be an opportunity for under a new program for some people to become immigrants. But roughly speaking, what the Senate bill does, it allows currently unauthorized farm workers to become immigrants and eventually U.S. citizens. But it would be much more difficult for guest workers in the future to find that same path to U.S. citizenship. It's possible, but it will be much more difficult. They truly will be much more like guest workers as opposed to people who are probationary on the way to immigrant status.
We only have about 30 seconds left in the segment, but I'm curious about comprehensive immigration reform versus a piecemeal approach, and specifically dealing with agriculture. Do you envision a situation where there would just be an agricultural immigration reform bill, period?
Well, what makes agriculture unique is that the major union, the United Farm Workers, has negotiated with the agricultural groups this combination of legalization and new guest workers. If that stalls, and if there's a major labor shortage crisis, then it's possible there could be piecemeal with just the guest worker part. But absent that, it appears to me as if the agricultural groups are going to stick with the package of legalization and guest workers.
Okay. We're now joined by two key players in the immigration reform debate as it relates to agriculture, actually folks that have gotten together on this issue. We have Diana Tellefson-Torres, the executive director of United Farm Workers Foundation, and Jason Resnick, the general counsel for the Western Growers Association. Welcome to the Maddie Report. Well, let me start with you, Jason. What do you think about the current immigration system as it relates to agriculture? Is it something that simply needs to be modified or improved, or does it need to be just junked and replaced?
Well, in a word, it has to be scrapped.
I think that's like junked. Okay.
It does need to be junked, and the reason why is because currently growers, farmers, ranchers have a choice to access the current unauthorized labor force. About 70% or more of the labor force is unauthorized. That's an untenable position to be in. The other choice is to go with the H-2A program, the current legal program for agriculture, and it simply doesn't work.
Nobody uses that, it seems like. Only 10%, I think I read, of all ag workforce goes through that program.
It's less than 4%. It's maybe 60,000 or so workers came through that program last year. It doesn't work. It's prone to delay. It's expensive.
And delay is a problem for agriculture. Because if you don't get the things picked out of the fields, then it rots.
Right. And then a late worker is as good as having no worker.
Okay. What do you think, Diana? Do you think that the current system is workable or does it need to be scrapped?
Well, you know, agriculture is the industry that would benefit the most from immigration reform. We know that about over 70% of farm workers are undocumented. And so from the farm worker perspective, it's certainly not a tenable position, you know, to be in. It's workers have a lot of fear, uncertainty about their jobs, being able to raise your families when you have that kind of fear is really, really a tough situation. So I think just in the general perspective with immigration reform, most immigrants who are here contributing to our country just don't have that access to fully participate. And that's just plain wrong in our point of view. So I think the path to citizenship and the full integration is really, really important to us, and to make sure that, farm workers are participating in a
positive way. The Senate bill on comprehensive immigration reform was really the result of a bunch of negotiations that were going on. AFL-CIO and the chamber cut a deal. The growers and the United Farm Workers cut a deal. So the question was, are these side deals necessary for politics to work? Did they produce a better bill?
The reality is that the organizations that were negotiating on the ag part, at least, were the most impacted. So we had farm workers, UFW, and we worked with other organizations that represent farm workers as well. And then we had the major grower associations. So you're talking about the folks who are literally doing the work on a daily basis, the most impacted. And so given that we all have relationships with different politicians throughout the country, we represent a large portion of that constituency for many congressional members. So I think it made sense for those who know the most information about this industry to come together and really figure out a way forward.
What do you think? Were these side deals necessary?
Well, Diana's right. The growers are the most impacted. The workers are the most impacted. So in order for there to be something that could be supported by the growers, something that can be supported by labor, it would have to be a compromise between those constituencies. Without buy-in from either one, we know that there has to be bipartisan support. There has to be industry and labor support. And if you don't have that, it won't get through.
I think that's what fell apart last time. Maybe in 2007, they didn't have that support. And work together. What about the issues that you were dealing with as the Growers Association? Were there some issues that were just non-negotiable?
Well, we started with the construct that we wanted to get all of agriculture together. So we got agriculture unified around central tenets. And one is that we needed something that would work for all segments of agriculture, permanent, seasonal, regardless of geography. So in the west, the east, north, and south, it had to work for everybody. There couldn't be winners and there couldn't be losers. And it had to deal with our existing workers, and it had to deal with a new guest worker program. That was the construct that we created, and we presented that to the labor organization, UFW, and they had the opportunity then to negotiate the details. And that's where the serious negotiations took place.
So what were the non-negotiable items for the United Farm Workers?
Just to mention a few, I think the top one was to make sure that farm workers have a pathway to citizenship. You know, we already believe that they've earned citizenship, and that obviously is politically untenable circles. But
let me put a fine point in it. That's a deal breaker for you guys. Is it a deal breaker for the United Farm Workers if there's not a pathway to citizenship?
That's certainly something that we want farm workers to have. I mean, we have farm workers here in this country that have been here for many, many years, and professional farm workers who are currently working in this labor force are really truly part of that fabric of our society. So we think that that's something, like I said, we feel like they've already earned that opportunity. But I think given the deal that we came up with, that it's something that makes sense. And so that was one of the issues. Another one is to make sure, we wanted to make sure that wages of farm workers don't go down from what they're currently at. Our preference was that we would increase wages much higher than they currently are, but we wanted to make sure that that doesn't go down.
Now I want to ask you both, we've only got about a minute left in the segment, and that is about dealing with this issue comprehensively or issue by issue. So we've only got a little time here in this segment, but what do you think about it? Is this something that can be dealt with issue by issue, or does this need to be dealt with comprehensively?
In my view, it needs to be dealt with comprehensively. We think the Senate got it right. They're dealing with all the issues, and you really can't put one issue before the other. You can't have enforcement before you have a pathway for workers to come to this country legally. If we had that, agriculture would go out of business.
What do you think?
And we're in agreement. I mean, I think this is a comprehensive issue that we need to deal with. There's a lot of different things that come about in immigration reform. I think when we put different parties together that come from different perspectives, some folks care a lot more about certain issues, whereas others are fighting for other issues. So when you bring all of those folks, you know, at one table and you talk about what is it that we can do, I think you come together with more, I think, a better deal because you're addressing all the different facets of issues that are at hand.
We're talking about immigration reform and its potential impact on California and the San Joaquin Valley agricultural industry in particular, with Diana Tellison-Torres, Executive Director of the UFW Foundation, and Jason Resnick, the General Counsel for the Western Growers Association. I'd like to get into some specifics now about the ag provisions of immigration reform. So, Diana, one of the things that was agreed to was a national minimum hourly wage in 6 farm worker occupations. Why was that important?
I think the way that the guest worker program currently is being done is you look at different surveys, that government surveys that determine what the AWER is, or the adverse effect wage rate. We'd heard for many years from growers that, you know, the system that's being used or the wages are artificially low. And so that's something that obviously growers wanted to discuss on the UFW side, because we knew that 70% of farm workers were undocumented. We felt that those wages were artificially high. You felt that it was artificially high. We felt that it was artificially low. Mm-hmm. And so when we were discussing this, growers also brought up that, well, you know, there's a way that we can deal with this, and it's disaggregating the different levels of farm workers that there are. So field workers, machine operators, and we had to come to the conclusion, yes, you know, that farm workers who are working in fields are probably making less than farm workers who are operating machines. And so when we started to come up with these decisions, we felt that that's something that we could give in on, because we know that at no cost to farm workers, growers can actually not lose as much money if you disaggregate that information. So that was something that I think both of us want.
Sounds like a traditional labor relations negotiations,
yes,
to me.
Correct.
So what about the new minimum wages? Are they going to help or hurt California agriculture, the national standard?
Well, it's going to definitely help California agriculture, and that's because under the current H-2A system, you have a new adverse effect wage rate every year. It's uncertain, and it's really not tied to any specific job. It takes all of the farm worker wages in all categories and aggregates them together to create a artificially inflated wage. This creates a wage. We know what it is. It creates certainty, and it has an escalator for it to go up.
I wanted to ask Dan about that escalator for a second. You know, it can be adjusted anywhere between, I guess, 1.5 and 2.5%, kind of like a COLA provision for minimum wage. That doesn't even exist for the regular minimum wage. That's a pretty big deal, isn't it, for farm workers?
You know, I think when we look at just union members in general, we see that in those contracts, we tend to get very modest raises on an annual basis. And so when we went around talking to farm workers throughout the country, something that was really of value was for them to be able to have an annual increase. And so what's in the deal right now, we feel, is a very, very modest increase. And it's an incentive to keep farm workers, professional farm workers, working in ag. And we definitely feel that this was something that I think the deal that we came up with, both sides can live with.
You know, Jason, I wanted to ask you about the E-Verify program and the fact that they're not going to phase in as quickly in agriculture as they are in other industries. Why a different phase in period in agriculture?
Well, it's simply because if the workers are not available when we think they'll be under the new system, farmers and ranchers are going to be in the untenable position of losing their existing workers and not being able to bring in the guest workers they need to get the job done. So we wanted to make sure that we didn't put the enforcement provision in too soon before the guest worker provisions could catch up. And under the program now, everyone will be under E-Verify in 4 years.
There's a quicker pathway for ag workers to permanent residency status and potentially citizenship than other occupations. Is there a concern among growers that these people are going to transition out of farm work to other parts of the economy, and then you're going to be at labor shortages all over again?
Well, that was the incentive that needed to be provided to keep farm workers in farming for a period of time while we transition to the new guest worker program. Once we have a new future flow program in place, that will be the majority of the farm workers in this country.
Okay, last question. I only got 30 seconds left in the segment. So, Diana, farm workers are given a faster path to citizenship than other workers. Why is that fair and appropriate?
You know, I think that you ask most Americans and that they would probably say that, you know, farm workers feed every single one of us. And I think given the hard work that they do on a daily basis, that that's something that people would be okay with. And we know that this is an opportunity for farm workers to continue to work in ag for a certain period of time. But we also feel that it's really important to acknowledge the hard work that they do and acknowledge the impact that this industry has in our country. And we feel that this is something that would be very, very helpful and of value to farm workers.
Well, I want to thank our guests. We're talking with UC Professor Philip Martin, an expert in immigration and farm labor issues. You've referred to the agricultural worker provisions of the Senate bill as, quote, a victory for California agriculture, unquote. Why?
What the guest worker parts of the Senate bill do is give farm employers something they've been seeking for a long time. Three things, actually. The first thing is that the administration of the program would shift from the Department of Labor to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And there'd be less supervised recruitment of U.S. workers. Secondly, instead of providing housing at no charge to the foreign workers that employers hire, they could provide a housing allowance of $1 or $2 an hour, and then the workers would have their own housing. Thirdly, and very important for California, is the Senate bill provides a national minimum wage for agriculture. So within the United States, wages are higher in California, in Washington, and other places than they are in the Midwest and the Southeast. For the first time, we would have a national minimum wage for legal guest workers employed in agriculture, which is $9.64 an hour in 2016. So that's what many farm employers in California are already paying because wages have been bid up. But so California farmers may not have to raise wages much, but farmers in North Carolina or Georgia or Ohio might have to raise wages significantly.
Well, listen, who benefits more from comprehensive immigration reform, the current undocumented workers or the future guest workers?
Well, the current undocumented workers benefit primarily because they, provided they continue to do some farm work, they get an immigrant status for themselves and for their children. Remember, once they register and pay the initial fine, they can also do non-farm work, provided that they do some farm work as well. So they don't have to work exclusively in agriculture. They can start making a transition from farm to non-farm work.
Will there be downward pressure on wages for guest workers because California is high compared to other states, and California can then wait for other states to catch up and they don't have to raise their rates as much? Or?
Well, the competition might be more in the product market. Some kinds of fruits and vegetables, Maine and broccoli, parts of Georgia and blueberries, have been increasing their production, not really necessarily at the expense of California because the market has been growing, but if their wages went up, if we all hired guest workers and their wages had to catch up to California's, that expansion of labor-intensive agriculture in the other states might slow down. That's the market advantage for California.
Well, will immigration reform have any economic impact on immigrants from the San Joaquin Valley who tend to be less educated than other immigrants?
Well, the immigrants in the San Joaquin Valley, once they're legalized, they will have more mobility in the labor market. They will feel empowered to go and look for other jobs, which perhaps they do not do now. So legal is better than unauthorized status in all cases at all times. But they will still, many of them will still have 9th and 10th grade educations and may lack English and may lack schooling. So just legal status alone is not going to take them from the fields to Intel. Okay. It's going to take education and training.
So what about the impact of immigration reform on investment and increasing the middle class in the San Joaquin Valley? Same answer?
Well, pretty much the same answer. It's better to have legal workers than unauthorized workers, but in people who create middle-class jobs need an educated workforce. And until the San Joaquin Valley offers that, it's going to be harder to attract large numbers of jobs that offer those higher wages.
Well, what if a comprehensive immigration reform doesn't pass? What are the implications for California agriculture and the San Joaquin Valley?
Well, this year, except for dairy, the San Joaquin Valley agricultural commodities, by and large, are doing fairly well. This is a good year, by and large, for agriculture. There is a lot of uncertainty about the labor supply, about the water supply, so farming has challenges, and this year is no exception. If it does not pass, the answer depends in part on what happens to Mexico-U.S. migration with the recovery. Does it stay low or does it start going up again? What happens with the federal government, which is like a super tanker and its enforcement is getting ever so slightly better? I don't really foresee a labor crunch this year in the San Joaquin Valley, and prices are good, but uncertainty is bad for farmers. It's bad for workers and bad for communities. So if we're thinking long term, we want to minimize that uncertainty if we can.
Okay, last question. So is immigration reform going to pass or not?
I think it would be very good if it's very hard to predict the future. My guess is that it's perhaps 50-50 and whether it will pass or not. We were here in 2006, when the Senate passed a very similar bill and the House did not take it up. I don't know whether that will happen again in 2013 or not.
Okay, well, I want to thank Professor UC Davis Professor Philip Martin, Jason Resnick with the Western Growers Association, and Diana Tellison-Torres from the United Farm Workers Foundation for joining us.
Up next, what impact will immigration reform have on California agriculture and the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Rob Roy, president of the Ventura County Agricultural Association, Mark Silverman, director of immigrant policy at the Immigrant Legal Resources Center, and Ryan Jacobson, CEO of the Fresno Farm Bureau.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. What impact could immigration reform potentially have on California agriculture? We have three points of view on that question. Ryan Jacobson, CEO with the Fresno Farm Bureau, Mark Silverman, Director of Immigrant Policy at the Immigrant Legal Resources Center, and Rob Roy, President of Ventura County Agricultural Association. Welcome all of you to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. So, Ryan, let's start with you. Agriculture employers have notoriously shunned the current H-2A program, citing its high cost and burdensome red tape. Only 10% of farm jobs are estimated to be filled through the current program. What's the problem with the current immigration system?
Great question, Mark. There's actually two issues that we have from the agricultural perspective that I would really want to focus on. The first one being is the cost. Believe it or not, you know, the bill that we're looking at right now, the cost of the H-2A currently is much higher than that. So we have a substantial issue with that. I mean, just from the bat, from the application standpoint, it's $1,000. And then it just only gets more expensive from that point forward. So we obviously have an issue with that. And number two is the time frame issue. The time frame issue being that you actually starting minimally 75 days, but realistically, you got to look more like 100, 125 days in advance. You need to have a very accurate projection about where your crop is going to be, when the time frame is that you're going to need these employees to show up, and for what time period you're going to need them for. As you can imagine, here in the Valley's ag industry, that is incredibly complicated to do, just from the simple fact that with the diversity of crops we have, and depending on how the seasons go, there's great variability. Believe it or not, there's probably anywhere from a 4 to 6 week variability as far as when crops are harvested. 2011, our grape crop was 2 weeks behind average. This year, it's 2 weeks above average. So a grape grower like myself, it would be just about impossible to try to project that. And like I said, I'm on the hook for that contract if I don't fulfill it.
Mark, what do you think the problem is with the current system? Or is there a problem with the current system?
Well, I would defer to the experts here on how it affects the farmers. From my point of view, my constituency is undocumented workers and their families, mostly U.S. citizen children. The biggest problem is that in California, I think 70% of the farm workers are undocumented workers, and they suffer a great deal. They can't visit their parents. They don't have work permission. They can't get a driver's license. They're always fearful of deportation. So we have an industry that is sustained by work of people who aren't granted legal status and whose lives are greatly restricted in many ways. To me, that's the biggest problem from the farm worker's point of view.
Rob, it sounds like there is also a problem with the current system in terms of, you know, if you don't have the right number of workers trying to then get them when your crops come to harvest, that's a problem because then the crops could end up in the field and not picked.
Yeah, Ryan's right. I mean, you know, there's a lot of inflexibility with regard to the program in terms of getting workers here on a timely basis. There were surveys done by the National Council of Ag Employers showing workers arriving an average of 22 days later than needed, several hundred million dollars worth of losses. You know, there are pockets of the agriculture industry where the program has worked very well. North Carolina, Georgia, and perhaps in mid-Florida. But for California, we have effectively demonstrated to the Congress that because of the specialty crop industry we have, that its structural inflexibility doesn't really meet the needs of California agriculture. And one of the other things, one of the really biggest things has been the litigation that has been associated with many of the migrant groups and this particular program. In many instances, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in penalties, whereas the new program that we hope will replace H-2A has a number of safeguards in there for agricultural workers and farmers alike, where you have other recourses to binding mediation and arbitration rather than running to the courthouse all the time.
You know, Rob, I want to ask you about this national minimum wage standard that was set, and also this housing allowance. The standard that they're setting actually is lower than the current California standard. So is that going to have a positive effect on California agriculture, making other states pay their farm workers higher rates? And so is this going to improve market share?
When I was looking at that question, Mark, I was wondering where you were coming up with the national minimum wage standard. Are you referring to the rates that were negotiated as part of the non-immigrant guest worker aspect of S-744?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you have to bear in mind that in California, there are no minimum standards for housing allowances, and the only minimum standard, really, is the California minimum wage. And roughly, I think if you look at the national average for farm workers and you compare them to California, California is really right in there. These negotiated rates here that we have in the agreement were the result of a really hard-fought battle between the migrant groups, UFW, and you know, agriculture on the other side, you know, and they were skewed a little bit upwards because of the type of jobs that are found elsewhere that pay at a higher rate. But I don't see that as setting any. I think it's really going to level the playing field, if you will, for all growers throughout the United States. And we're experiencing a lot of this whipsaw going back and forth right now where there's not enough workers and they're forcing employers to be engaging in bidding wars against themselves. And I think that the new standards in this bill, once they become implemented, will set a real parity throughout the United States.
Mark, what do you think, you know, representing immigrants undocumented, are these national minimum wage standards and housing allowances a good thing?
I think it's good, as a speaker just before me indicated, to have a level playing field. I think from the employer's point of view, first of all, it's great in terms of one of the advantages for employers, I believe, is having legalized workers so that other employers, who are less scrupulous than the ones that these gentlemen are representing, pay people horrible wages, sometimes less than the minimum wage, and that's not fair to those employers who are abiding by the minimum wage. So I think it's good for the employers. It's clearly good for the workers in order to obtain legal status. In other words, I think it's win-win, and I admire the growers and the farm workers organization after tough negotiating to come up with a compromise, because the growers get a regularized workforce that they can depend on, and the farm workers can lead a decent life without fearing deportation and being able to live kind of a normal life with driver's licenses, decent wages, etc. So I think it's win-win.
Ryan, what do you think about this national wage standard and housing allowance?
I honestly don't think it's going to have too much of a dramatic effect on California agriculture. We're going to see in this particular area, obviously, that's been set. But for some of the other free market items, with the labor, the situation it is in right now and everything else, obviously, that we are in the middle of a shortage. I don't know if we'll get to that point or not, but we are in a shortage right now. This is an issue for us. I really don't think it's going to have a major effect.
Rob, I wanted to ask you about this national wage standard and the fact that it's kind of a little bit lower than California, farmers pay in California for their labor. Is that going to put pressure on California agriculture maybe to come to the mean and perhaps slow down farm labor rates for new guest workers going forward?
Who is this for?
Rob.
Oh. Basically, I don't think so. I have to go back to the negotiation process where the worker advocates feared that the new guest worker program would lead to wage stagnation, and the employer advocates were more concerned about spiraling wage inflation. So against that backdrop, the final negotiated product really provides some really good safeguards against both concerns. And so I don't think that's going to have any major impact on wage standards in California.
Mark, what do you think? It's going to have a good impact on wages for farm workers in California?
Well, I think having legal status will help produce more protection for the workers. Keep in mind that I'm not an expert on the H-2A, and my primary reason that I am happy about this is that it provides a route for legalization of farm workers, for some farm workers where they are on a road to legalized status and then citizenship. So I'm really not an expert on the H-2A one, but I just think in general, when workers are legal instead of undocumented, it has a positive impact on wages because they can't be super exploited by their employers who say, take what I'm giving you or else I'll call immigration or at least I'll fire you and where else can you go? So I would say yes.
Okay. Ryan, I want to ask you a question about there are a number of exemptions in the current immigration bill for agriculture, a faster path to citizenship for ag workers, slower implementation of E-Verify. Why is agriculture getting these exemptions, and are they fair?
Well, number one, I will be first to say that ag was the first to the table on this particular issue. I think it's no secret. We've talked about, I don't know what the numbers are. We hear that 11 to 12 million person figure as far as those that are improperly documented in the United States, whether that's right or not, I'm not sure anybody knows. The agriculture industry approximately has about 1 million of those folks that are employed in the industry at this point. So when you look
and
at
that. And many of them in California.
That's correct. Yeah, many of them in California. And I think one of the misconceptions number one is that all those are agriculture, and that is wrong. I mean, there are many of those that are in other service-related industries and other parts of the segments of the economy that kind of like to stay hidden. But ag was number one and upfront in saying that, again, it's a figure that bounces back and forth, but somewhere between 70 and 80% of the California workforce in agriculture is improperly documented. So when you look at that, we came to the table early and started looking at our issues. Many of the advocacy groups and agriculture groups came together to try to figure out and work on some of these issues. And I want to point out, for example, in the slower implementation of E-Verify, there were some very specific reasons why we did that. We had the Department of Homeland Security that came and visited with us about 2 years ago, the local ag groups, and to learn specifically about our hiring practices and what it encompasses when we do bring a person on board. And there was very specific reasons why DHS could not come up with a system on the time frame that we needed to make it work for the agriculture industry. So that's why you see that exemption number one, not exemption, but as far as delayed compliance, and then secondarily, the faster path to citizenship. There not necessarily is a faster path to citizenship. It's more on just the faster path to residency. That was an important issue
for
us.
Which then could potentially lead to citizenship.
It could technically, yes, could technically lead to that. The specific components of the reasons why that was in that bill is that there are provisions for that individual to get that residency. They need to stay employed in agriculture after this bill is passed. Mm-hmm. So there's the before component and there's the after component. Realizing, I think it's, we've talked about it before as an industry, we're very concerned about these folks all leaving the ag industry at one time. So therefore, this was a way to help keep them tied to the ag industry at least a few years going forward.
Mark, what do you think? Do you think that kind of this quote-unquote expedited path to residency and or citizenship and or slower implementation in E-Verify is appropriate for the agricultural industry?
I do, for two reasons. First of all, I think there's some of the They contribute to our economy in an area where Americans do not want to work, do those jobs. They contribute to, they hold up, and along with their employers, the most important industry in California, I believe. So I think they deserve it. Secondly, as was just pointed out, this is, they have to continue working in agriculture. Thirdly, one of the differences that you haven't mentioned is, and a very good one, is they don't have to meet the English requirement. We, as do the in the main legalization provision. And I think we hope they learn English, but these are people who have had very little schooling in their country, usually Mexico, and the English requirement is much more difficult. And finally, you know, I don't like the E-Verify. It's a bitter pill that we have to swallow, and I understand why. So the fact that it's going to be implemented more slowly in agriculture makes sense to me, as well as to the employers.
Well, you know, Rob, I want to ask you the last question in this segment. That deals with if comprehensive immigration reform passes, typically agriculture has been seen as kind of the gateway for immigrants into other parts of the economy. So if farm workers now have a quicker path to residency and or citizenship, won't agriculture be facing the same labor shortages that it's facing today as those folks transition out of agriculture to other parts of the economy?
Well, that was one of the things that we tried to avoid with this negotiated settlement. If you go back to IRCA back in 1986, there was this seasonal agricultural worker program that granted citizenship or amnesty at some point to agricultural workers, and we lost many of them to other industries. And as Ryan correctly stated, there are a number of components of this particular program in order to obtain a blue card visa and then to obtain a green card towards permanent residency status. So we tried to keep workers an incentive for workers to stay in the agricultural industry for as long as possible. And that in turn would give us the legal ability to implement the non-immigrant guest worker program that would not be fully implemented till probably around 2016 or so. And that is one of the reasons why these gentlemen were talking about delaying E-Verify or phasing out H-2 until a later date, so that these particular seminal events could occur. So basically, I'm looking at the future reliance of agriculture is really going to be on a non-immigrant type of guest worker program. But in the interim, we're going to have a significant number of agriculture workers that worked here in 2011 and 12, including supervisors and foremen, who will be able to take advantage of the blue card visa, who will come out of the shadows. There'll be derivative benefits for their families to come out of the shadows. They will obtain valid Social Security numbers, which will get them into the system and allow them to file for their own tax returns to get their own Social Security benefits at some future date. So the blue card aspect is hopefully going to require these people or have these people want to stay in agriculture for as long as possible to gain that entryway for the green card visa.
Okay, well, we'll continue this discussion on the impact of immigration reform on farm workers and the agricultural industry in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about immigration reform and its impact on California agriculture with Ryan Jacobson, CEO of the Fresno Farm Bureau, Mark Silverman, Director of Immigrant Policy at the Immigrant Legal Resources Center, and Rob Roy, President of the Ventura County Agricultural Association. So, Rob, if comprehensive immigration reform doesn't pass, could we still see a separate immigration bill as it relates just to agriculture?
I would like to say, personally, as someone who's worked on this thing since 1995, yes, I would love to see that, but I don't know if the political situation is there in the House in order to get a smaller bill. I think that the House at this point does indeed recognize, as did the Senate, that there's a special need for agriculture to have this program. I just don't know whether or not the votes are going to be there in order to have a standalone type program apart from general immigration reform.
Mark, what do you think? A separate bill for just agriculture?
Well, many people who see the need for an agriculture portion of a bill would strongly oppose having separate agricultural, a separate bill, because that would, they feel, would hurt the chances to get comprehensive reform. We need the senators and representatives who would not vote for a comprehensive reform bill unless there was an agricultural segment included. So therefore, if the agricultural segment is excluded, it will hurt our chances to get meaningful comprehensive reform.
Okay. You know, Ryan, there seemed to be a lot of agreement specifically on the agricultural section of immigration reform. Do you see a situation where just an ag bill on immigration would pass?
Very unlikely. In fact, we don't see that happening from a couple perspectives. Obviously, there's the coalition building with the other groups that would help to make this happen. Yeah, there's broad support, but there's broad support because I think there's the other components of it, border security, on and on and on. I think we fail if we go alone.
You know, what if it's an all or nothing approach and we get nothing? What is it going to mean for Valley crops and agriculture?
It's scary. Very scary, Mark. And I say scary in the sense that one thing a lot of folks don't know that's going on right now, even under the Obama administration, is the ICE audits that are taking place. We've had a number
of those. And describe ICE, what that is.
It's the Immigration Customs Enforcement. It's the agencies that are going around and basically looking at I-9s and making sure there's a legal workforce by the definition.
So I assume then when farm workers get the rumor starts spreading that they're coming, that ICE is coming around, then they scatter.
Absolutely. And we've seen that. We've actually had several of those happen here on the local level. We've had several, and it's not just been related just to agriculture. There's been other groups that types of businesses that have had ICE come in, and basically they conduct an audit at that point, and those individuals are then terminated if there's found to be individuals that may not meet the standards on the I-9 that you would like to, that the government would like to see. Obviously, from my employer standpoint, these individuals are filling out the documents as required by law, but obviously it's very subjective when it gets to some of these documents, and that's where a lot of the issues rise. So what do we see if it's all or nothing, we get nothing? Well, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but I don't know whether it's 3, 5, 10 years down the road, we're in some trouble as far as our labor workforce here.
What about in Ventura County, Rob? What if this doesn't pass? What are the implications for agriculture in Ventura County?
I think typical of other areas of the state, if we get nothing, we're going to see more labor shortages. We're going to have more management decisions to scale back production of labor-intensive crops. We're probably going to see more importations from foreign competitors. And I also see from a statewide standpoint the diminished potential of California to be a job-creating economic engine for many areas and for years to come. Remember that agriculture is a $42 billion industry, and there are probably 20 to 30 ancillary businesses that feed off of agriculture. And there's a maximum that for every job, ag job created, there's anywhere from 2 to 4 upstream jobs created.
You know, Mark, you kind of have a view of all of California. I mean, what are your thoughts for all of California if immigration reform goes down this year?
Well, again, my organization hasn't taken a position on this issue, the all or nothing. I'm just now telling you what other people in the immigrant who look at it from the immigrant's point of view, what's best for them. Again, I think I agree with what the gentleman has said. I really want an agricultural component as part of the immigration reform. It's just that I think many people who are looking at for the interest of undocumented immigrants, and I believe many of the senators would not accept a standalone agricultural bill. I think it's really important that it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime or once-in-every-25-year opportunity to fix our whole broken immigration system. And many of these things don't apply as much to agriculture, but the one who said it best was President George Bush. We have a broken system. We have employers who want to hire workers and workers who want to work for those employers, and the system doesn't permit it. We need to fix that.
Well, what do you think, Mark? Is the Senate bill that was passed on a bipartisan basis good or bad for California agriculture and their farm workers?
I would say it's good. The technical stuff for the farm workers, you know, it's a compromise, but it was an honest compromise, and I think it's good for California farm workers, especially undocumented farm workers and their families.
Rob, what do you think?
I think that it's going to be a tough debate in the House. We'd like to see whatever bill comes out of the House that it maintains intact the ag component that was negotiated between the parties in the Senate. I think it's a bit of a perfect storm this year with the results of the presidential elections. I think there's a lot of soul searching within the Republican Party about the need to reach out to the Hispanic community. But more importantly, this is a great opportunity for us to recognize a segment of our society that is really making a lot of contributions that people don't recognize. So I'm very hopeful that we're able to do this and accomplish this year.
Ryan, what about you? Good or bad, this Senate bill on immigration reform?
Obviously, we've been very supportive of it. It encompasses a lot of what we did, but I think Mark said it best. It's a compromise. So as you can imagine, there's things we like.
The other
in
Mark.
It. Yeah, sorry. Yes, yes. there's things that we like in it, and there's things we obviously have some concern about. But you got to realize this is a change for us. When I say change for us, obviously going towards looking at this guest worker program, this is much different than what we've done historically. So as far as hiring practices.
So we got less than a minute left in the program. So I want to ask each of you very quickly, what do you think the chances are for immigration reform this year? Ryan, what do you think?
I think the House passes something, but I have no clue what it looks like. And then I think the big question is what the conference committee comes up with.
Okay. Mark, what do you think?
I put it a little over 50%.
Okay. You give us a specific number. Rob, you going to give us a specific number?
I can't give you a specific number, but I'll tell you what, it's our best chance in the last 20 years. I think the political climate's there to do it, and if we fail to do it, we just can't afford the repercussions.
Well, I want to thank our guests, Rob Roy, president of the Ventura County Agricultural Association, Mark Silverman, director of immigrant policy at the Immigrant Legal Resources Center, and Ryan Jacobson, CEO from the Fresno Farm Bureau. Thank you all of you for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Matty Daily, by just logging on to our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.